Welcome back, baseball fans, to episode 37 of the Nats GM Show, the only podcast available via the Nats GM Radio Network. I am your host, Ryan Sullivan, the editor-in-chief of NatsGM.com and the baron of all baseball podcasts. Before we are joined by this week's guest, I would like to briefly mention our sponsor, Amazon.com. If you want to help support this podcast, and Lord knows we can use your help, go to NatsGM.com, click on the Amazon link on the right side of our page, and do your online shopping. One more quick favor, if I might. Please rate and review this podcast on iTunes, as this does help us gather additional listeners and a bigger audience to our show.
This is Donovan Dijak from Ring of Honor, and you are feasting your ears on the Nats GM Show.
And now, without further ado, I am honored to welcome back to the show C.J. Whitman Jr. C.J. is a member of the Baseball Prospectus Prospect Team, a major fan of wearing shorts to baseball games, and one of the sharpest baseball evaluators that I know. C.J., Whit, welcome back to the Nats GM Show.
It's an honor to be back. Thank you, Ron. I like the introduction this time. It was much better.
I appreciate that, man. And Mike Farron was the stooge that told me that you're a big fan of shorts. So
that does not surprise me one bit.
But CJ, welcome back to the show. I'm glad to have you on. You did a great piece for the site a couple of weeks ago talking scouting, which just got an enormous reaction. So I want to talk to you a little bit about scouting today. But I also want to start with talking some Nats and some Orioles prospects, because you've been sitting at the field a whole lot the last couple of weeks.
I have, thank you. Yeah, I'm excited. I've been seeing some good guys, and we've been talking back and forth about some different guys. So I'm excited to get into what we have today.
Okay, the first place we got to start is Ronaldo Lopez. I think you were at his start last Tuesday. Whoever's listening to this, depends. Probably this will be about a week ago, but. Just from my point of view, my phone started blowing up about 10 o'clock that night with a lot of F-bombs and a lot of great words about Ronaldo Lopez's outing. I know you were there. Just what did you see from Lopez?
I said my fair share of those, too, by the way.
It was nice, yes.
My jaw was on the ground. It was just, wow. It's the only thing I could say was, wow. Where's this guy been? And I had a clean slate going in, but I had known what Tucker and what Mike had thought about him, and Farron was telling me, the fastball's doing this, the command's this, here's the curveball, here's the changeup, yada yada. And I had respect both of them, and I value their opinion, so I knew that this was going to be something serious when I was going in, but I didn't know it was that serious. I didn't know he was going to be 96 to 99, touch 100 at the knees for six innings. I mean, and with Lopez, what I noticed was, he's a Dominican, so he falls into that spectrum that we had talked about when we were talking about scouting Dominican bodies and their success rate with being starters and most of them becoming relievers. With him, it's a little bit thicker frame than I expected. His lower half is a little bit more filled out than I thought. And his upper body is strong. He looks like he has strong forearms. He just looks filled out in his uniform. And to me, with his delivery, how quick his arm is, and he starts on the first base side, and he lands on the first base side, and his hips and his shoulders rotate. They just explode to the plate, and he really throws his front side through and explodes to the plate. So I'm thinking that it's going to affect his fastball command, but his fastball command was good. It was consistent. It was on. And when he was missing, he was only missing by small increments. So that's things that I think that he can clean up. It's a 3/4 arm slot, and the fastball is live. I mean, like I said, it's 96 to 99, touched 100. He held the velocity throughout the whole start. It's a heavy ball. It's a bowling ball. I mean, it's sinking down to the arm side. Then he's got, a little more of a, in the upper velocity, it's more of a swing fastball. But then when he's at 96, 97, it's more of a sinking fastball. It's almost like he's changing his grip to vary the fastball, really. And that was impressive to see, especially from him, a guy that's really a pop-up guy. He got some late speed last year. But, with that and what I liked from his curveball, too, it's an 11-5 shape. It's a two-plane break with some bite, some hard snap, and it really plays off of the fastball well. You know, when you come out of the hand and you see it out of the hand, sometimes with a curveball with a guy, you can see the little bit of shape out of the hand, and then the other part of the breaking ball comes.
Right.
While with him, it kind of comes out like the fastball, and then it breaks the first time, it breaks the second time, the deeper break towards the plate. Got a lot of depth to it, is what I'm trying to say. And for me, you know, I really thought it was going to work, and I really think that he's going to be able to get some swings and misses with it. It's not an elite secondary by any means. And Mike and I had agreed with this, and we think it's going to play, you know, average to solid average, but since it plays so well off its fastball, it's one of those pitches where it's not really a true pitch. It's only maybe, you know, the potential of a 55, but it's definitely going to play there and can maybe even play off at the highest level because of the fear of the fastball. And that was the same thing with the changeup, too. The changeup, it gets flat, but he replicates his arm speed very well, and it's a 10 to 12 mile an hour difference. So just by that alone, he's going to get hitters out on the front foot. So when he's throwing the fastball at 99, it can drop this hammer on you at 80 to 83. And then he's got the changeup where he put that wherever he wanted. But that was really impressive to me, too. Is, you know, he really put the changeup wherever he wanted. And that's going to be an average pitch, I think. And that's just going to play really well off the fastball. So you're looking at an arsenal. He's going to have a true fastball, a true 8 elite starting pitching fastball, with a solid average curve and an average changeup, and I think his command could even get to a 6. I mean, his command for me right now is average, and that's impressive for a high A guy that really has got some steam last year. But if you think about it, you know, if he was, I know he was a low rate signing. I'm not positive what he signed for.
14K, I think it was.
Yeah, okay, 14K. So I would imagine when he signed for 14K, he was probably throwing 85 to 88, probably.
Right.
And they see the projection with him, and they see what it can be. But I don't think that they imagined it was going to be this, that it was going to be 97 to 100. So when you're looking at a guy, he needed to learn to pitch first before the stuff came, is what I'd gotten from his start. So he learned to command the fastball within his mechanics, and he learned to throw the curveball for a strike and the curveball for a chase. So when he gets when he progresses and he gets that stuff, and that stuff is real, he already has the command and he already has the control. And those are two different things, but the control is plus, and the command is average, and I think the command is going to get the plus too. And then we're looking at a monster here. That's an elite fastball with two average better secondaries and plus command. I mean, how many guys in the league can you think of that arsenal?
Very, very few.
Right, and he's not the prototypical really skinny build of a Dominican, like I was saying. So I think he's going to be able to hold up for 180 innings. And if he can, I want to see him do it because of the durability. There is some durability concerns, obviously. A lot of stress on the shoulder through his delivery, and he's had a little bit of a shoulder concern before. So I do want to see him do it over the course of the season, but I think if he can, we're looking at, you know, this is possibly a World 6 guy, number 2 starter at the highest level.
So let me have you play devil's advocate. What are his weaknesses that he still needs to work on and going forward?
I just think his I wouldn't really consider it a weakness, but it's definitely not a strength. It's that the secondaries don't play elite, or the secondaries don't play plus or even 70 grade. So he's going to have to make do with what he has. But they are good, though. You know, I'm not knocking the secondaries. I just think, if the starting path doesn't work out well, he's got an elite fastball, so he could be a closer. But I'm not quite sure if he could be a closer is my thing, because he doesn't have that secondary he can go to.
Right.
Get hitters out no matter what. You know what I'm saying? If he were to become a closer and he ever were to lose the fastball command, he couldn't go to a secondary to get somebody out, is what I'm trying to say. Because hitters could just sit on the fastball, and if they needed to hit the breaking ball, they could hit it. Big league hitters can do that. We know that. So I think his biggest weakness, I guess I would say, is that the secondaries don't play plus or 70 grade or even elite.
Okay, so there is some risk in this profile, but like you say, it's a pretty good floor as well.
Right, most definitely, and I think that the floor is going to be an eighth inning arm. I definitely think he's definitely a big leaguer for me. You know, barring injury, and the ceiling is a number 2 starter.
That's I'll take that all day long. So,
that's for 14,000. I know that.
Yeah, no kidding. That's the best investment you can make. So, but one thing that I did want to pick your brain on, and I actually mentioned this to you off air, was one of the texts I got on Tuesday night was another scout. He wasn't BP, but he was another, you know, very sharp baseball mind, who told me just in a very short text that he would take Lopez over Giolito right now. And I just kind of want to give the floor to you and how you would respond to that text, frankly.
I've seen both of them, obviously, and for me, I wouldn't. I think you can make a case that Lopez is going to have a better fastball at a higher level than Giolito, even though I love Giolito's fastball, and I think you know, it could definitely play elite to whether he changes eye levels of the hitter, and it's so explosive to the arm side, and it's a premium velocity too. But I just think, you know, Giolito's secondary is really pushing him over the edge for me. You know, the curveball is one that is going to, I truly believe it's going to be one of the best in baseball, at the highest level. I mean, you know, it's a slider velocity, it's hard, just fighting and snapping pitch. I mean, it's got extreme depth to it. It looks just like it's fastball and just, it's a hammer.
Yeah, it falls off a table. It's unbelievable.
And we know that. So when you're looking at, when you're comparing both of them, you have to take that into consideration, that even if you think Lopez has a better fastball and Giolito has the Tommy John on the resume and the mechanics are a little more violent, I just think the secondaries for Giolito puts it over for me. And when I saw Giolito last year, it was a little hard to project the command, but I thought that it was going to get the plus. I mean, he really worked his zone, and I think I truly think that's what it is. That's what it's going to be. So I think they're both going to have a plus command profile. Lopez possibly could have the better fastball. I give the changeup and the curveball both to Giolito. So if you're asking me who I would take, I think the difference between Giolito's secondary pitches and Lopez's secondary pitches are greater than the difference between Lopez's fastball to Giolito's fastball. So I would take Giolito.
Yeah, I think the only way that you lean Lopez is if you're really concerned about Giolito's health. But then Ronaldo has some of the same, different but similar issues as well.
Right, and like I said, you know, with Giolito with the TJ on the resume, Lopez has some shoulder concerns too.
Exactly right.
So it's not 100% that he won't get hurt either.
Yeah, another, shoulders in a lot of ways are worse than elbows, so.
But, right, most definitely. And hell, every freaking pitcher is getting hurt anyway, so yeah. They're probably both going to get hurt.
Yeah, please don't say that. Please don't jinx us like that.
Knock on wood.
So another arm that I want to ask you about in the Nats system that you've seen a bunch is Nick Pivetta. I think I ranked him 11th preseason in the Nats system and caught some flack for it in a lot of ways. What did you see from Pivetta? I think you saw him earlier this week.
Yeah, I've seen Pivetta twice now. I've talked to Aaron a lot about him, and we both like him. I think your ranking of 11 preseason was perfect. But I was really on, and I think he's going to be a top 10 guy coming next year. Projection guy, big guy, sturdy build, projectable body, high 3/4 arm slot. He is big, but he's kind of a drop and drive guy. Uses his leg pretty well, so he holds velocity deep. I think he's got some broad shoulders, so I think he's still going to add some good strength. His mechanics are a little out of whack, but that's something that they're working on. He falls off to the first base side sometimes. He's got a slight crossfire in his delivery already, so, you know, a foot strike, he's got some spine tilt. But the stuff is good from him. You know, his last start, he was more working fastball command than curveball. He does have a slider too, though, that plays in a little higher range, but I didn't see that his last start. I saw that his first start. And the guys that I had talked to said that he's kind of shelving the changeup and the slider right now to work on fastball command and curveball. That's just something that we had picked up, that we had thought, and that I had thought too. I don't have that confirmed from anyone, but just from seeing him in his two starts, he's really been, you know, throwing fastball. He's not sequencing like we had talked about. So that makes me think that he's working on that. But the fastball velocities, I have written down here 90 to 94, touch 95 six times last start. So it's some premium velocity. You know, it's plus fastball velocity. If he gets the command there, it's going to be a true plus pitch. And the curveball I have as, you know, 11-5 shapes, got some bite, a little loose. You can get under it a little bit. Sometimes it breaks early, but, you know, when he gets on top of it, it's a downer. It's a hard bite. It's got a little bit of depth to it, so it's got potential to play average. So I like him. Right now, it's got present below average command. I think there's a chance he can get the average, but, you know, doesn't have that much effort in his delivery. So I think that he'll be able to iron the things out that he needs to. And he's good. I like him.
Yeah, I think he's built, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but, you know, a pretty solid number 4-5, you know, a back-end starter, eight innings.
Yep, that's exactly where I was going with it.
Gives you some good starts, and then we'll get a clunker every once in a while because, like you say, the off-speed offerings aren't great. Kind of, you know, but a solid pitcher.
Right. Yep, and that would be that's a good guy. He's a good guy to have in between Lopez and Giolito because I'm sure all three of them are helping each other because they understand that all three of them are big. I think Pivetta's a big leader, so I think all three of them are probably helping each other with their regimen, you know, their workouts, their throwing programs, and everything like that. So it's good to have, for him, it's good to have two studs next to him, you know, kind of guiding him. And maybe even vice versa. Maybe he's, you know, telling them something that they need to work on or they need to do this, to do that. So
yeah, that's a great point. All three of them can push each other in different ways. That's a great call.
Most definitely.
So now I want to switch to the bats. I know he's gotten a promotion in the last couple weeks, but Wilmer Defoe, I know I sat on him earlier this year. I know you've spent a bunch of time watching him. Probably the hottest name in the national system in some ways, certainly from the hitting side. Let's talk some Defoe. What do you think? What are your thoughts on him?
Yeah, you know my thoughts on him. You know this is my guy here.
You've been blowing him up probably harder than I have. I mean, he's,
this is my guy, man. I sat on a couple of series to see him, and he put on a show. I mean, you know, like we had said last year, we weren't positive if he could stick it short. He needed, the footwork was a little rushed. He needed some more, just reps. He just needed reps there to really find out if he could play there, because the reactions and reads were good from him. He's got the quick first step, and the range plays up because of the speed, too, and he really reacts up to that. And when I saw him this year, the footwork was a lot better. The 5-5 hole wasn't a problem. He's best suited for middle of the diamond, like we had said. So I think it's going to be an average glove at shortstop with a plus arm, and even if they don't want to play him at shortstop, he'll be a hell of a second base. And like I was mentioning, the speed, oh my goodness, I mean, 4-0, 4-0-5 from the left side, 4-1 from the right side, and the swing lets him get out clean. I mean, the second gear is extreme. And I do a thing where when a guy's stealing first to second, I'll time that instead of the pop time. So if a guy runs, when he gets started and he steals the bag, including the slide, if he runs a 3-3, that's average. And then it goes up by, you know, one increment of a tenth of a second is the top of the scale. So a 3-0 would be like an 80 runner. So if you can steal second on a 3-0, you'll be an 80 runner. And I had Defoe at 301 to 305. I mean,
jeez. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's top speed in three strides, too. I mean, he gets to it, and he's there, and he's, I mean, it's game-changing speed is what I wrote in my report. It will be a stolen base threat, I can promise you that.
And he's pretty good at stolen bases or stealing bases too. I mean, he gets pretty good reads off pitchers.
Yeah, I mean the instincts are there too. I mean he was stealing on Cam Gallagher, and I don't mind Gallagher. I don't love him, but I don't mind him. He's a great organizational catcher, and he pops, you know, 2-0. I've gotten 198 before. So he's like a middle of the road average catcher. He throws around top of the bag too, and I mean it's not even 3/4 of the way there, and defense is starting to slide. He's in by three steps. He's in by a tenth and a half of a second. So, you know, he reads pitchers well, and the speed is just, it's game-changing speed, like I said. And then you get to the bat, and he's got some juice, man. He's got average roll. There's a slight lift in the swing. I mean, he can backspin at the off-field. It's above-average bat speed with barrel feel, and that's big for me, is barrel feel and barrel control. Can you control the barrel through the zone? Can you adjust to the breaking ball? if you do get your weight out in front, what can you do? Can you control the barrel to flick it to left or pull it down the line? You know, and he showed that he could do that.
I love the balance in his swing, too. I think he has exceptional balance.
Exceptional balance and exceptional hand-eye coordination is two things that I had exactly written in my report on my computer. You know, I just think that the legs, too, are going to let him stretch singles down the line into extra bases. You know, I think at peak, he's going to be a guy that hits 8 to 10 bombs with 35 doubles and steals 40-plus bags. You know, 10 triples. That's, you know, he's a 55 extra base hit guy, 40 steals. I mean, that dude is an effer, is he not?
That's
you know what I mean?
That's a fringe all-star is what that player is.
Right, exactly. I think it's a possibility that he can make one. I have his overall future potential as a Rule 6 player, first division shortstop. You know, that's a guy that can make an all-star game.
And the other thing is the swing is similar from both sides. That's what I like, too. It's not like this, well, one swing is completely, like a Danny Espinosa type, where one swing looks completely different than the other. I mean, it's almost a carbon copy from the left and the right side.
That's a perfect explanation. That's exactly what I was going to say next. I'm glad you took the words right out of my mouth. I mean, it is like, it's a mirror image on both sides. And that, to me, isn't as important. I think if a guy has more power from one side and, you know, more contact skills from the other side, I don't mind that. I won't complain about that. But for him, it's a mirror image, and that's, I really do like that. Slight lift in the swing, like I said, it's above average fast speed. Short pass through the zone. I mean, it's quick to the ball, and he can really get extended on the pitches in the outer half. You know, like I said, it's just the feel and the contact skills and the barrel control, along with the advanced plate discipline and the approach at the plate. I mean, he was tearing up high. We knew that. We knew the promotion was coming soon. So I'm looking forward to what he's going to do in Double A. And like we were talking about, if he puts on a show in Double A this year, what are the chances that they call him up and play him at second?
And we were talking about this off air, as you alluded to. You know, if Ugla keeps struggling and Espinosa comes back to earth, or Rendon's injury is a lot longer than everybody anticipates, they're going to have a hell of a decision in, let's call it, 2-3 months around the futures game. I mean, they could really have a tough decision.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm hoping that Rendon's injury is not what we think it is. You know, I'm hoping he gets back, because I'd love him as a player. I think he's going to be one of the elite hitters in this league for a long time. He can really swing it. But if it is a little more serious than they think, I think you can make a case that if he can handle the Double A level, like I think that he can, I think he's got a legitimate shot to be up by the All Star break.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's definitely a 2016 guy for you, right? I mean, like me.
Yeah, and actually, it's funny you say that. I caught a little bit of heat for saying that he would be in the bigs next year. I wrote his MLB EPA 2016. And I caught a little heat for that, like, hey, he's in high A, he's a 23-year-old in high A. I'm like, I don't care about that. Like I was talking about when we were talking, you said you'd like our first episode of our new podcast, we were talking about age in certain levels, and I had said that talent trumps all. Talent trumps all in this case. He's a talented kid, he's a great player. I didn't care that he was 23 in high A, because he had just turned 23 too, by the way. So he's really like, I'm a brand new 23-year-old in high A. So he's just a little bit older than his competition, and I'm thinking that, look, he's going to dominate here. He's going to be in Double A. If he plays the rest of the year in Double A, and he starts there next year, he's going to be in the big leagues, you know?
And there's an organizational need, or at least a potential organizational need with, and you know, Desmond a free agent, and Ugla and the rest of the guys, so.
That's exactly what I said, too. I said I wouldn't be surprised if he did challenge for one of those middle infield spots to start the year just because of the need of the team.
Yeah, I would just be curious if it's Trey Turner or Defoe is the top middle infield prospect, according to the Nationals, anyways. Because I think it's Defoe for us.
I would love to get into that, yeah. I think it's Defoe for me, too. I'm saying I hate Turner because I love Trey Turner, too. And I'm looking forward to getting some eyes on him. Whenever he becomes an official part of the Nationals. But I love Turner's game in college just because it was 8-speed and very good chance of sticking a shortstop. And I think that those two things are very valued. They're very important. You don't see many of them, actually.
I'd like to hype up a race between Defoe and Turner. I would like to be the Don King for that.
I would like to do think about this. I would love to do a piece on those two. Maybe with you or I could mention something at DP to compare those two, compare and contrast those two in their games and their styles. And then, you know, say who I like better. Or say, you know, maybe, I think this is something that we could do. It would be a great idea is let's compare and contrast them two and then say who we think is going to be the better player and who we like better and who we prefer to be a shortstop in the future.
Wow. Yeah, that would be a great piece. Let's do that somewhere along the way. We got to do that because I'm a Turner guy as well. So it's a hard choice.
I'm thinking, here we go. I'm thinking after he comes over, when does he come? July 1st?
And it's earlier than that. I think it's like June 12th. It's pretty soon.
Okay, yeah. In June, we're going to catch him. And then and then we'll work the piece up. I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, I'm in. Absolutely. So... Okay, anybody else in the Nats system that we should be talking about? Anybody that you've seen?
That's a good question. That I've seen, I've only seen Potomac. I didn't see...
Are you a Bautista guy? Do you like Rafael in center?
Did I like who? Bautista? He's been hurt. I didn't see him.
Ah, okay.
I'm not a Drew Ward fan, I can tell you that.
Ooh, okay, because I am. Okay.
Yeah, see, Drew Ward for me, it's long limb, so it's a long swing. I've had some issues with makeup with him, arguing with umpires. He was ejected from the game the other night. I just never saw it in the field either. I never thought that he was going to be able to play third base. I thought it was a first base profile. The positives on him, I have big roll power. He can get extended on the outer half, but he's getting beat in the high A on the inner half. And I don't think he's ever going to get there. I don't think he's going to make the necessary adjustments to really get to that pitch on the inside, on the inner third.
That's very interesting. That's interesting because I think he's a future left fielder, and I think the power plays, and I've seen him make adjustments myself. So I think he makes the adjustment. That's interesting.
Okay, yeah. I had that. And, you know, we can only scout what we see, right?
Right, so yeah, absolutely.
I haven't seen him make the adjustments, so I'm not very high on Drew Ward. You know, I trust your judgment, I trust your opinion, so I would love to see him again then and see if he can make the adjustments. And I'll catch them plenty of times in Frederick or wherever. You know, if I have to go to
because I've gotten some good run times on him, and I think his future is actually in the outfield.
Really, you have good run times on him? You do? What did you have? Do you have him in front of you by any chance?
No, I don't have him in front of me, but I definitely have gotten some good like second to thirds. You know, tagging up on fly balls and
okay, yeah, and okay, stuff like I can that. See that.
And he covers
because
some ground.
Once he gets going, he's not that slow. But it's just a long swing doesn't let him get out of the box. I think I've only got him like 4 or 5 from the left side. Is it? Fastest time for me.
Yeah, and like you say, it's the first step or two is not great, which is why he's probably not a third baseman, but I do think that he could, I mean, we've seen some bad left fielders out there, and I think his hands play, I think the arm is good, so.
I think he's got a plus arm. I hadn't written down the plus arm.
And the kid's 19 still, maybe he's turned 20, he played in an absolute, you know, bum F Oklahoma, he graduated a year early, he's holding his own at high A as a 19 or 20 year old, I've seen him make some adjustments. I mean, I don't think he's a stud, but I think there's a chance that he's a, you know, maybe a backup, you know, plays three positions, you know, National League player and carves out a 4 or 5 year career.
Yeah, that's totally fair.
I use Ryan Garko as an example all the time. Just a guy that plays, you know, 3 or 4 positions, you know, had a couple of good seasons, you know, versatility helps in the National League more, but that kind of a player.
Yeah. Okay, I could see that. I respect that. Then I was hoping you weren't going to go on a rant about how you think he's an everyday stud and everything. So I was going to get into that.
Even in my wildest dreams, he's not a league average left fielder. I mean, in my wildest dreams, no.
Right.
But I do think he could be a guy that could play 30 games in left, a few games in right. You know, a handful of games at first and third, pinch hit for you, left-handed bat off the bench. You know, somebody that can contribute for 4, 5, 6 years while he's cheap.
Yeah. I will go on record saying that if I see him make the adjustments, I will fully agree with you and be the first person to admit that I'm wrong.
All right. And I'm guessing you're probably right. And I'm guessing you're probably right in this instance. So
we'll soon be find out.
Next player I want to talk to you about is Dylan Bundy. I know you sat on him a couple of weeks ago. I actually watched him last night, kind of as I'm recording and as we're recording. The line has not been particularly good. Mine was horrendous last night, but I think maybe I just want to give a little ray of sunshine to Orioles fans who are probably a little concerned looking at Dylan Bundy and going two innings and, you know, not really pitching that much. So let me give you the floor first, what you saw out of Bundy a couple weeks ago.
All right. I had told this story on our podcast too, and I just love telling it just because I know Tucker's going to love me telling it. last year I saw Bundy, and I just wasn't impressed. I was like, wow, you know, maybe he's coming back from surgery too soon, yada yada yada. I told Tuck, I'm like, hey, I think I'm going to really put out this, I don't know if Dylan Bundy's going to return kind of report thing. And he's like, I don't know if you should do that. And I'm like, you know what? Just in case he does return, because I know he's a workhorse and he's probably an 80 makeup kid. He's like, just in case, you know, maybe you shouldn't do that. And I'm like, you know what, Tuff? This is probably the best advice you've ever given me. And I don't put it out, and I'm just keeping it to myself. And every time me and him bounce ideas back and forth, I mean, Tucker and I, we talk every day. We have great baseball talk. I mean, he's one of my good friends. He's awesome. And we're talking, and I'm like, I think I like Harvey better. I think Harvey Cook's going to be better. I think this, I think that. And he's like, I can see it, you know. And he's like, just give Bundy some time. I mean, just give him some time. You know, he's a maxed out 5'11", if you give him an inch or so. Pitcher, he's like, just give him some time. Maybe it's going to take a little longer. The only person I've ever seen come back from 11 months from TJ and be throwing 97 to 100 with an 8-hook is Giolito. And, I mean, that's just unrealistic expectations for everyone.
Exactly.
So we come back this year and we see him, and he's like 2012 Bundy. I mean, 94 to 96, touch 97. Like, the changeup is just the money pitch now. You know, it's arm side speed. The arm, he replicates the arm speed. It's almost like he throws his changeup farther than his fastball. Just because his delivery looks effortless now. It's got a little bit of effort, but it's not the high exertion delivery that he was going for last year where he was only throwing 90, 92.
Right.
It's a little bit more, it just looks more controlled, and he looks stronger. He just looks so much better physically too. And it's 94, 96, touch 97. The changeup's money at 85 to 86 with arm side speed. He replicates the arm speed. He can throw it anywhere he wants. The hook's back, 78 to 80. 11-5 shape with great depth and two-plane break. And then he's got the slider now. And it like I said to Tucker, he needs to come to the realization that Orioles, as an organization, needs to come to the realization that the cutter is never going to be what it used to be. That's one of the worst pitches for the elbow. Let's just scrap it.
Right.
Just give him the slider. You know, and I don't think the slider is much better for the elbow than the cutter is, but it's just less stress overall. And he's not going to throw it that much and yada, yada, yada. So the first start, I see it, and it's like 80, 84. Got some tilt to it, you know. It's his cutter in high school anyway was an exaggerated cutter. It was already a big cutter. It wasn't a no cutter. It wasn't, you know, a Kenley cutter where it's just that 6-inch movement that moves from the barrel to the end of the bat. It was a little bit bigger anyway. So the slider, I think people could have projected the slider earlier than they did.
Agreed. So, that's a great call.
Yeah, so he throws the slider now. And I'm looking at it, and I'm thinking, okay, it's going to play average. It's going to give him a true fourth pitch to his arsenal, and I loved it. So I see him again for an inning because I was with John Miovia, of course, and it was going to rain the whole time, and I knew that. So I see him for an inning, and he's throwing the slider, and I'm like, shit, this might be a little better than average.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like 84, 85 now. Harder bite, you know, more tilt to it. You know, that's a true horizontal breaking ball. I'm like, shit, what if this plays plus? And then I'm thinking to myself, hold on. A guy that has a double plus fastball and three plus secondaries, like, that's unheard of. This plus command, I mean, dude, he's a Cy Young candidate. But then I'm thinking, wait, that's what Dylan Bundy was in 2012 when he was the rated fourth best prospect in baseball or whatever he was. I know he was one of the top pitching prospects early, right after he got drafted. I mean, this is a kid that went to the big leagues his first year pitching pro ball.
I mean, he gave up what? You know, five hits or something ridiculous at low A? I mean, it was absurd.
Dude, he went 30 innings, like five hits, 50 strikeouts or something crazy like that. And he just exploded into the prospect stratosphere and then made the big leagues. He went to the big league bullpen as a 19-year-old.
Yeah, it was amazing.
This kid is special. And I was so glad to see that from him. And I ate my words, and Tucker made sure that he made sure that he let me know that I was totally wrong with him.
Yeah,
but I'm glad that I was wrong with him.
Yeah, because last night I saw him and he was 92-95, touched 96 a bunch. And he threw 57 pitches for me. 46 were fastballs. So all he was doing was pounding the inside of the zone. And the slider he threw, I had six times, three swing and misses. I threw a plus on it immediately. It was nasty. He almost gave it up because he was just overwhelming the other hitters. I mean,
yeah.
I saw two curveballs, you know, more show me, you know, 74, 75 range. And the changeup he threw, I think, twice, more splitter action. But like you say, the fastball's legit, and he's got three, at least 55, you know, off-speed offerings. I mean, it's...
Yeah.
It's real.
I would agree with that. Yeah, it's real, man. And like we were talking about before on the air, the line looks ugly, but if you go over what you had just said, look how many fastballs he threw. He probably wasn't sequencing, like we had said. Probably working fastball command, maybe inner half fastball command, really.
Absolutely.
So the more you repeat that, the more hitters see it. No matter what, you could throw 110. If you give hitters enough time to see it and time it, they'll hit it. You know, velocity only takes you so far. So if you're not sequencing and you're elevating the fastball and you're giving a longer period to see that, hitters are going to time that no matter what. Even if you're a 24-year-old in AA, you can time that eventually.
Well, and Richmond's got a lot of experienced hitters. Like you say, they had a lot of 24, 25, 26-year-olds. And, yeah, if you don't hit your spot on the inside with the fastball, it's right over the plate and they smacked it. I mean, that's kind of the way it went.
Right, and that's the same thing that will happen in the big leagues. I mean, you give big league hitters enough time to time a fastball, they're going to time it. They're going to hit your shit. Like, yeah, they're going to hit you eventually. So I think with Bundy, the fastball command's getting there. It's not there yet. You know, building the arm strength, I think, is still an issue for him, too. Even though the velocity's there, the stamina might not be there, which could be why he's only going three innings since now. I don't blame what the organization's doing to him, you know, not really taking the reins off just yet. I don't mind that. Let him go. Let him throw three innings into June, into July, possibly, and then let's make him throw four innings and five innings, and let's see how deep into a game he can get to. So if they're competing, I think he's the guy. If they're competing, he's the one that's going to be up. He'll be in the rotation, you know, in August. If they need seven starts down the stretch from somebody, it's going to be Bundy, I think.
Completely agree. Or if they need a monster in the bullpen, something like that, he could also be the option.
Yep.
So,
yep, definitely agree with that.
One more guy I want to ask you about, and it's going a little off script, but I've been blowing him up like Snoop Dogg and Puff Daddy. Jomar Reyes. Have you seen Jomar yet?
I have seen Jomar, actually, and you're a big fan, yeah?
I am currently, he might be my second prospect in the Orioles system right now behind Bundy. If he's not, he's third.
Okay, I have him, after the year, I'm going to have him third. If Bundy doesn't graduate, I'm going to have him third. I'm going to have him behind Bundy and Harvey.
He's better than Cisco. I might be the only person that thinks he can still catch. And I still would take Reyes. Tucker makes fun of me on a daily basis. No chance he can catch. I know I'm the only one that still gives him a shot, but
I don't see it. I don't see it. I don't see him being a catcher. But either way, even if he is a catcher, I still think Jomar.
I mean, Jomar is. Tell me. Well, you introduce him because I've talked about him enough. But the power and just what did you see?
I saw a monster man of a man. I mean, he's
I comp him body wise to J.J. Watt. I mean, he's a monster.
He must be, honestly. I mean, he's I think they have him listed at 6'3". I'm like, there's zero chance.
No chance.
Yeah, and I think Tucker had talked to somebody, and he's like, okay, he's more like 6'6". Like,
yeah.
Jesus. I mean, and but that's the concern for me, is that he's, if he's going to be a clogger, he probably can't play right field. But we, like we said, we've seen some bad left fielders. I mean, Mark Trumbo plays out there. So it's not impossible. Probably a first base profile, and I don't really mind that, because I think the bat's going to play there. The bat is legit for me. Double plus roll, above average bat speed for me, and the hand-eye coordination is exceptional. He recognizes spin at such a young age.
It's amazing.
It is amazing to me, because you don't see that often. I think you see guys that recognize spin, but I don't think you see them barrel it in low A, and he's been able to barrel it for me, and it's good spin, too. It's quality breaking balls. It's quality changeups that he recognizes and he barrels. So I think as he progresses, he's really going to be able to hit. I think the double plus roll is going to play. I think at peak, I said he's got a legitimate chance to be a 6'6 bat, and Tucker agreed with me.
I went 65 raw, 50 hit.
Yeah, I can see that. I think Tucker and I had said 5'6 originally, and then the more we marinated on it, the more we sat on it, he hit 7 raw for us, and the more we sat on it, it was like, you know, I think he's going to hit more than we think.
Yeah.
So we were like, can it get to the plus hit tool? And then we're talking with scouts, and we're talking with everybody, and they're like, yeah, we think so. Like, definitely, I'm going to write that in my report. And then we, you know, we pick somebody else's brain on it, and they're like, I'm not sure, maybe he decides he wants to hit for more power. Maybe he becomes like a fringe hit, but 70 power guy. He sacrifices average for power. Or maybe he sacrifices power for average. Maybe he becomes a 60 hit, 50 power guy. I think he's going to have the choice of what he wants to do, because the barrel skills and the hand-eye coordination and the feel for contact is so innate, and the recognizing spin and the play discipline and the approaches is so advanced for his age. I think he's going to have the choice of what he wants to do, like I said. So, overall, we said first base profile, because he's just so large. I mean, he's probably just going to outgrow it. He might not even be done growing. But legitimate bat, power bat, probably the best bat in our system, definitely.
Easily. I think it's easily the best bat in the system. Well, Cisco's a good hitter, too. I shouldn't say that.
I meant to say easily, too. I didn't even want to say probably. I'll say he's definitely the best bat in our system.
Yeah. So, well, I'm glad. I might even rank him one if Bundy graduates. I mean, it's that special when you see it.
Yeah.
So
I think you can make a very legitimate case, especially if Harvey's hurt.
That's, yeah, and you took the words out of my mouth.
You can make a very legitimate case that he's their best player.
Yeah, that's amazing. So get to Del Mar, everybody, and go watch him play. So,
I would definitely recommend that.
All right, Whit, I do want to ask you a couple of scouting questions, a little more general, alluding back to a couple of the articles you did, or the article you did for us a couple weeks ago. And it got such a great reaction. I do want to just kind of hear your, you know, audibly you say kind of, you know, what was said in the piece to a certain degree. But when you are starting to, let's start with scouting pitchers. You're at a game. What are you looking for when you're scouting a pitcher?
I'm gonna actually bring our article up just so I can reference it. But what I look for in scouting pitchers, like I had mentioned in the article too, is during the warm up pitchers, I really dig into the mechanics. Maybe a guy doesn't throw with 100% effort in warm up, but he still uses the same mechanics. So I'll break down a mechanical look at a pitcher then, you know, the arm slot, the hip rotation, the shoulder rotation, the foot strike, is there spine tilt, is there some head whack, what kind of arm circle is there, you know, does he create angle, you know, does he have a crossfire, you know, such characteristics like that in a pitcher. And then once the game starts, I look at, you know, how well can he sequence, you know, how well is how the command works, how the control is, and I differentiate those two things as control is throwing strikes and throwing good strikes, bad strikes, any kind of strikes. But command is strategically placing a pitch where you want it to go, even if it's not a strike. I mean, you can throw, you can command a fastball 4 inches off the plate, and people will say, oh, well, that's a ball. Yeah, but that's the pitch that he wanted to execute.
Right, so exactly.
So the command is there, okay? So when I do that, I don't really look into velocity readings. That's more just data for me. It's just to reference back to, because a hitter will tell me how hard a pitcher is throwing. And I had heard that, actually, the person that had told me that is Jason Parks. He was just, you know, he's giving advice whenever he can. But he had said, you know, a pitcher will tell, or a hitter will tell you how hard a pitcher is throwing by the way he reacts to the velocity, by the way that he reacts to the pitcher. So
that's a great point.
If I have a guy that, yeah, if I have a guy that's a deception guy, but he's throwing 90 to 92, and hitters are still late on it, I know that that fastball plays up from the velocity because of the deception. Or maybe I have a guy that has a true fastball, and he's throwing 96 to 98, but he's getting squared up, and he's getting turned on. And then I look at myself, and I'm like, "What? This guy's throwing 98. What is he getting squared up for?"
Right.
It's because they can time it and they can see it, and it gives them, even though it's a harder velocity, it gives them a longer time to react because there is no deception there or stuff like that. So, you know, those are kind of the things that I look at with the pitcher. When breaking down pitches, I was just gonna get a look when I'm breaking down pitches. You know, change up. I look for the arm side movement. You know, does it dive down? You know, does it have tumbling action or fading action? People like to say, does it have vertical drop on a changeup? And that's when, you know, out of the hand, it looks like the fastball, and then it drops vertically, and it fades to the arm side. It's just a natural, you know, movement to the pitcher's arm side and down is usually what a changeup does. And I've seen guys that cut their changeup. It's almost like, it kind of looks like a short breaking ball, but it still has the vertical action, still has the vertical movement. You know, when scouting breaking balls, you know, obviously you look at the type of shape that the pitch has, the type of spin, the break of it, obviously, and the sharpness and the velocity also.
Very cool. Very thorough. Now let me throw it to the other side. Now you're scouting a hitter. What are you looking for when you're looking at a bat?
Like we had said in the article, you know, things that I look for in a hitter, I do look for bat speed. I think premium bat speed is a very important thing because it allows you to get away with, quote unquote, more mistakes, I guess. You know, when you're guessing the pitch, or if you get a 2-0 fastball and you know it's coming, you can really jump on that pitch and hit a bomb or hit one into the gap. But really, I look to see in a hitter how the swing works and how everything, it's like poetry in motion, how everything that a hitter does, how it all connects and how it all works, you know, to the leg kick, to the weight transfer, you know, does he have a little bit of a hitch, to the start of the swing and the mechanics of the swing and using the lower half and does the barrel lag or does the barrel get through the zone quick? You know, does he get extended on balls in the outer half? Can he get to the ball in the inner half? You know, just the mechanics of the swing and everything, it comes first and foremost. And then I look at the neurological aspect of a hitter. You know, can a hitter recognize spin, or can he recognize the spin but he can't barrel it, or does he not see spin at all? And you can read that by the way that a player reacts to a breaking ball. Like I'd use an example, you know, player X flinched when the breaking ball was coming to him. So therefore, me, that makes me think that he thought it was a fastball. So he's flinching to get out of the way, but it's a breaking ball, and then he breaks it for a strike. And then he looks dumb.
Right.
But then you also see a case where a guy will throw a slider in the bottom of the zone, and it looks like a fastball, but it's a slider, so it breaks away from him, and the guy's swinging through it, and he's missing it by a foot. He doesn't have
the Drew Doshi effect.
yeah, exactly. That's funny that you said that, because that is one of Drew Doshi's problems. I saw that he was getting some prospect love because the numbers look great, but he can't see spin. He can't recognize spin. You can beat that guy with average velocity and a half decent breaking ball.
It's amazing,
you know. And it's so funny you said that, because that is such a great point. And And another guy that had that I didn't think had it that's been tearing it up recently is Bubba Thorne. I never saw the neurological aspect to recognize and barrel spin from Bubba. He could hit a bad breaking ball. You throw him something that broke early and it was soft and it was middle, pecker high, Bubba's going to hit it. And he's going to hit it a long way. But the thing is with Bubba is that when it gets to quality spin, when it gets to the double-A level or even the big level, if he does get there, the quality of breaking balls in the majors is such a big gap from AAA to AA to high A to low A. So I see him in high A not recognizing spin or barreling bad breaking balls. What is he going to do when he gets in the big leagues? You know, he just has no prayer.
Right.
And I see him hitting some bombs, and the raw power is never the question. You know, it was the barrel skills and the approach and everything, and people think that George Brett might be the savior for him. When I saw Bubba, I didn't think he was a much different player, and I talked to Keith Law the other night, and Keith was saying the same exact thing. I saw the same guy. You know, he was, you know, a year older, maybe a little bit more mature, you know, maybe he's got a little bit better approach, so he's put himself in better hitter's counts, and then he can jump on the fastball once in a while, but I just didn't see it from Bubba, and I don't think he's going to be anything more than that, than a defensive replacement.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. So the last question, and I could ask you 100 questions about scouting, but the last question I want to ask is one that I get all the time, or people ask me all the time, is why is it so much more difficult to scout a hitter than a pitcher?
I think that's a great question. I like this question. I think it's harder to scout a hitter because I think hitters don't usually have that fallback plan. Like a hitter, it's like you can hit or you can't hit. With a pitcher, if you're looking at a starting pitcher, he has kind of a fallback plan as the bullpen. You know, if he can't be a starter, well, maybe he can be a reliever. Well, then, okay, then it kind of changes because he goes from a starter profile to a seventh inning reliever, and then he's a big leaguer. When you're looking at a guy that was 21 years old, he didn't have a chance in hell in starting. He didn't know what he was going to do because you don't really see pitchers become position players as much as you do position players become pitchers, too.
Sure, absolutely.
So, you know, you're looking at a hitter, and it's like, can this guy hit? Can he spin? You know, do all the parts of the swing work? You know, does he have the approach to play this one, the barrel skills, yada, yada, yada? I can say this all day, but the thing it comes down to is if he can't hit, he can't hit. And then is he a defensive replacement guy? Well, then he's probably not a long-term big leaguer, you know?
Right.
So, and then you can see if a guy can't hit, well, then maybe he can pitch. Maybe he can be a reliever. And we've seen cases like that, I think, more often than you see, you know, pitchers becoming hitters. So, of course, there is some cases like, you know, Rick Ankiel's the one that comes to my head is the guy that, I mean, he was a big leaguer as a pitcher and then just completely lost it, but then got back there as a hitter.
One of the greatest accomplishments in baseball, I think. Absolutely.
Most definitely. I have the utmost respect for Rick Ankiel. I think he's an awesome guy, too. But then you see examples like I saw a guy in low A this year, Derek Leaker. He's a 24-year-old guy. He was a hitter. Now he's a pitcher. That's a big league arm. He has a big league arm. He's a big league bullpen arm. He throws 94 to 96. He can touch 98. It's moving to the arm side, and he's got a fringy slider that can probably play average because of the fear of the fastball. He just needs to repeat his delivery. And they're babying him along. They're throwing him every fifth day instead of every third day, which is perfectly fine. It's a great plan for them because he does need work. But he's a guy that, like I had said on our podcast, he's a guy that I'm writing up as, well, hell, he was a failed hitter. He's 24 years old in low A. He's probably way older than his competition. But I'm still writing him up as a seventh inning arm because if he figures out that he can repeat his delivery, he's got a great arm. He's got a serious bullpen arm.
Yeah, and you can see what he is. I mean, the radar gun and the swings and misses tell you, okay, the fastball is legit,
right.
And you can see that there's potential with the slider.
Right. So, yeah, that's really my main point to that is I just think it's harder to scout a hitter because it really is what it is. You can make a very good argument that there's more things that go into hitting than there is to pitching. Which I don't necessarily love that argument, but I can see when somebody can make one. You know, all the moving parts have to be in unison, and they have to connect in some way for the swing to connect and for the swing to work. And then, obviously, with a hitter, you're swinging a wooden stick to hit a ball that you have 0.5 or 0.3 seconds, whatever it is, to react. So, I mean, the hand-eye coordination that goes into hitting is just, it's immaculate. I mean, this is why baseball is the best sport. I think it's the most difficult sport, is that you have to do something, you have to do something like that you don't have to do in any other sport.
Well, and the assumption is you can assume how the pitching is going to translate to bats as it goes up a lot easier than how the bat is going to translate to pitching as well.
Right. I agree with that. I like that point.
So, all right. Well, like I said, I could talk scouting with you all the time, but we're almost up on an hour, so I'm going to try to cut it here. I'd love to give you a spot right here for your plugs, where everybody can find you on social media. I know you've got a new podcast out. I'm a big fan of that. Give that a shout out, and you know, anything you want to plug.
I appreciate that. Well, obviously, you can find my reports over at Baseball Perspective. You can follow my Twitter handle at DJWITTJR. That's TJ Witt Jr. Make sure that you guys check out our new podcast over at BP. It's called Raw Projection. We're now on iTunes. And, Ryan, I just want to thank you for having me on, my man. It's always great to talk to you, and I hope I see you, catch you at a game, and we can hit some beers afterwards.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm hoping to see you for Ronaldo tomorrow. So.
Yeah, I'm hoping so, my man.
Thank you so much, Witt. It's always great talking to you, and I hope to have you back on the show sometime later this summer.
Most definitely. Just like we said, we're definitely going to do that Turner and Diesel article. I can't wait for that.
That'll be great. I can't wait for that.
My man, I appreciate it. Thank you for having me on, Ryan.
See you, Witt. I'll see you soon. And that was my conversation with C.J. Whitman Jr. from Baseball Prospectus. Obviously a good friend of mine, good friend of the site, and I think maybe one of the only, maybe besides Tucker Blair, one of the only two guys that sees more games in the area than I do. So very sharp mind. He's going to work for a baseball team someday, so I'm very honored and excited to have him on this week. So with that, episode 37 is a wrap. Bye for now.